my talk, I thought I'd concentrate on the very practical aspects to having a defibrillator. So what they are, what it means to have one, are there any restrictions, any limitations? Because these are the really common questions that patients ask, and you may have one yourself or a loved one has a defibrillator, or it's been discussed as a potential role in management. So I just wanted to cover all the bases of what they are, how they work, and why we use them. So a defibrillator, some people call them defibs, an implantable defibrillator, or ICDs. It means all the same thing. They're a small device which is called a generator. Sorry, I'll just grab the... Is the pointer? No? Ah. Thank you. That's okay. I can probably get by without it. That's right. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Laura. Thanks. So you might often hear of people describing defibrillators as batteries. Well, what we mean by the battery is the actual generator, which is I won't use the pointer, the little device that sits in the top of the chest. It's connected to one or more leads that is inserted into the heart, and the tip of the lead has a little electrode on it, and that monitors the heart rhythm 100% of the time. So every single heartbeat is monitored by the defibrillator. And it's programmed to detect any abnormal heart rhythms. And if the device thinks that the particular heart rhythm at the time is abnormal, it's programmed to treat that. And it can treat that in one of two ways. It may try to pace the heart out of the abnormal rhythm, which is a sort of more gentler way to try and cardiovert or restore normal rhythm. Or it may potentially need to give a shock to restore the normal rhythm. So... to the process of having a defibrillator implanted is that a cut or an incision is made just below the collarbone, usually on the left side of the chest. A little vein is located just below that point, and the lead is put into the vein and just fed all the way through to the heart. The lead is then connected to that little generator or battery. It's a little pocket is made under the tissue, under the skin in that shoulder area, and then the wound is closed up, and that's the device implanted. And, I mean, we put these in patients that have had an abnormal rhythm that potentially can cause a serious blackout or, in the worst situation, you know, a cardiac arrest. And those heart rhythm problems are what we call a ventricular arrhythmia, a ventricular tachycardia, or a ventricular fibrillation. So if somebody has definitely had one of these heart rhythm problems, it's almost mandatory or guaranteed that we will put in one of these defibrillators, or in anyone that we think is at a potentially high risk of developing one of these heart rhythm problems. And so, again, the defibrillator works by... It really monitors every single heartbeat. And we get a lot of information when you come for device checks, usually, you know, every so often, every 6 months or so. We see everything. If there's a few little extra beats out of whack, we'll see it. It monitors every single beat. It makes a decision every moment, you know, is everything okay? Do I need to act? So again, patients that have defibrillators, as not everybody with a genetic heart disease condition or another heart condition, only the patients that we think might benefit from a defibrillator, we will recommend a defibrillator, mostly because the defibrillators have their pluses and their minuses. Jody's spoken about some of the psychological problems with defibrillators, but there are also limitations of the defibrillators in terms of how they work and how they function. And defibrillators can be associated with complications like the leads can fail or they can stop working, that when they need to be replaced. There's other issues, so we don't give them to everybody. We just decide on a case-by-case basis who might benefit from one. Is the risk of needing a defibrillator greater than any potential problems that a defibrillator might be associated with? The defibrillator can be implanted either with a general anaesthetic or a sedation. So it's a procedure where if you need one, you need to come into hospital and have that done. Typically stay overnight, be monitored, everything's checked the following day. We make sure that the device is working appropriately, the wound looks good, everything's gone well, and then you go home the following day. We check an X-ray after the procedure for two main reasons. We make sure that the defibrillator is still sitting nicely, the lead is in the heart in the right position, and that there are no other issues associated with the procedure, like, you know, the lungs look fine and everything else has gone well. So after the procedure, that's not the end. We need to check the defibrillator on a frequent basis just to make sure that everything is functioning well. So defibrillators are checked usually after the first month after they're implanted. The main reason to check that is to ensure that the lead hasn't moved, the wound has healed, the patient has recovered. And then following that, we need to check the defibrillator on a periodic basis. Typically, on a routine basis, we check every 6 months. And that's more of an office-based visit. So that's where we have a programmer, like a computer, and the programmer can communicate with the defibrillator. They're often wireless these days, so the programmer can sort of read what's happened in the defibrillator in the time between checks and give us all the information we need, how the lead's working, how much battery's left, have there been any arrhythmias, anything we need to know, we can test through the programmer. And typically that's every 6 months. If we're concerned, we might ask you to come back more frequently, such as if the battery is starting to decline in its level, we might want you back every 3 months or so. Now, driving is a really important consideration and question. After a routine implant, a routine defibrillator insertion, there's an RTA mandatory rule that you cannot drive for 2 weeks, and that's for everybody. Anyone with a defibrillator can have a private vehicle license, but not a commercial license. So that is a heavy vehicle license, so driving, for example, trucks or buses, a sort of high-level commercial license. Unfortunately, the RTA guidelines are quite restrictive in that regard. If the defibrillator activated, if your defibrillator gave you a shock, there's a certain period of time where you cannot drive. That changes from time to time depending on when the RTA guidelines are updated. So in that situation, if you did get a shock from your defibrillator, stop driving and go and see your cardiologist just for the latest guidelines of that driving restriction period. Now, generally, household electrical equipment does not interfere with defibrillators or their functions. So some people are worried about things like microwaves or TVs or telephones. They don't interfere with defibrillator function. We do ask people not to put a mobile phone in their pocket right over where the device is sitting. But in terms of just general contact with, routine electrical equipment, there's no problem there. The main things that can interfere with defibrillator function are things like large magnets, such as MRI scanners, and also arc welding equipment. So they're the sort of two exceptions in terms of coming into close contact with equipment. but on a day-to-day level, in terms of normal function and most occupations, there isn't really any restriction. Now, a lot of people ask about that generator, that battery, how long before the battery needs to be replaced, and it can be quite variable, and it depends a little bit on how much the device is used. In an individual who has no shocks or no pacing, the device is just sitting there watching, the battery longevity is usually sort of towards the maximum, around sort of 6 to 7 years. In any individual that has needed treatment from the device, that might be a little bit shorter. So it is variable, but the average is around 5 to 6 years. And that's one of the reasons why we check every 6 months in the clinic, just to keep an eye on that battery, and you'll be advised when it needs to be replaced. So many people are concerned about receiving a shock and what it feels like, what might happen, what will they experience. And we generally tell people that if you do feel a shock, just try and stay calm, but please sit down, lie down, just get yourself into a fairly sort of safe position. Just don't stand up and try and, walk and notify someone. Just sit down, relax, and let it pass. If you get one shock from the device, again, don't drive, but you might want to notify your cardiologist if you're feeling well. But if you get a shock and you don't feel well, come straight to hospital because we want to evaluate you there. If you get more than one shock in 24 hours, even if you're feeling well, also please come into hospital for an evaluation. Now, Jodie's beautifully gone through the potential complications of post-traumatic stress and anxiety, and I just wanted to again reinforce that in my talk without overlapping too much on hers. But, fear of having a shock, even in someone that has not had one, just that anticipation, it can be a real concern. So if there are any situations in which you're feeling anxious or depressed regarding the device, please get help. Generally, in terms of getting back to your other activities like hobbies, sports, intimacy, people are often too afraid to ask about that, but that's also, you should be able to resume normal life and function after a defibrillator. So just, I thought I'd highlight just a couple of questions that I commonly get asked, they're probably many more, which I'm happy to take at the end, but these are sort of covering the most frequent questions that patients ask me when we have a discussion about a defibrillator. People are very concerned about, will they feel the shock, or, is it painful, what happens? It's a tough one to answer because it can be different for different people. Some people might pass out, so faint or have a blackout and not actually be aware of the shock. Some individuals may feel the shock. If it's felt, it might be uncomfortable or potentially more severely uncomfortable, more painful. It's quite different for everybody. It depends a bit on the circumstance, but it's possible that you would feel the shock, although, as I said, some people pass out and they have no recollection of that. If you do get a shock and you are touching someone else, say, hugging them or in some physical contact, there's no risk to that other individual. So don't be concerned about, physical intimacy or hugging someone and your device going off and hurting them. That can't happen. Similarly, women who are pregnant or planning a pregnancy worry about having a shock when they're pregnant and will it harm the baby? And that's also no. If the device activates during pregnancy, it won't harm the baby. We've sort of covered the when to go to hospital, but again, more than one shock in 24 hours, go straight to hospital, or any shock where you feel unwell, straight to hospital. And some people ask, or there's some confusion about the difference between a pacemaker and a defibrillator. Essentially, pacemakers are devices that pace the heart, so support a heart rate that is too slow. A defibrillator can do everything a pacemaker does, which is support a slow heart rate if needs be, but the main difference is a defibrillator is a much more sophisticated, much more capable device that can revert abnormal fast heart rhythms. So pacemakers are very common in the community. They're also similar sort of procedure and they look the same on an x-ray. But a defibrillator is really, you can think of it as a very special sort of a pacemaker, which is a life-saving pacemaker in the event of a fast abnormal heart rhythm. And just, you know, my last slide about, you know, the future and what happens. A lot of people ask in terms of battery changes, will the device get smaller and smaller and will they last longer? Generally, yes, but there's still some limitations with how small they can get because they need to be quite complicated with all their circuitry and technology and the way they monitor the heart rhythm and treat it. So they can't sort of get infinitely smaller, but there are some small improvements, you know, every generation. The latest type of defibrillator is a defibrillator that's located completely within the chest wall. So there's no lead in a vein, no lead sitting inside the heart. It's all in the tissues outside onto the chest wall. And these are called subcutaneous ICDs, if anyone's heard of those or come across those. They're something that has an advantage in that if there is a problem with how a device works, it's often because of that lead sitting in the heart. And you can imagine the leads needing to withstand all these heartbeats and all these mechanical stresses with every single heartbeat and all the blood flow. The leads that are outside the heart sort of bypass that problem, but at this stage they're only suitable for a very select part of the population, and I would say as a general statement most people aren't suitable for this type of defibrillator, but you know that is the kind of next step in where these devices are going.